So to help kind of keep the lights on goes a long way. So consider doing that. Support local, support music, support emerging artists. And that's it. Have a great day, everybody. Enjoy the show. Inside the Music with Stereo Russ. Welcome, everybody. If you haven't listened to the show before, I'm your host, Stereo Russ. It's an interview radio program. We interview local musicians, artists, and we've got a dual feature, as they will, today. We've got two great gentlemen in the house, one who's been in the studio before. We got Pete Van Helvoort.
Hello. I'm going to do my best to not talk. I'm just going to sit and enjoy the wonders of Luke.
and who do you have with you today?
I'm going to talk a little bit right now. I have my very good friend, extremely handsome, talented man, Luke Bentham of the Dirty Nail Experience.
Well, thank you for the rather warm and may I say suspicious intro there, Peter. Thank you. It's good to be here. Thank you very much for having us, Russ.
The pleasure is mine, guys. I'm really excited for this. You said talented and good looking. In what order specifically?
Kind of equal.
Honestly, like, I've always known that Luke is extremely talented, but getting to play these shows with him last year and even just last night, he's just like, you put in so many hours that you're just so phenomenal all the time that it is a good example of like the 10,000 hour rule of just like someone being like at the peak of their performance and kind of staying there consistently. So I am truly impressed all the time.
I'm paying him to say all this, by the way.
He's not.
Thank you, Peter. That's very kind of you.
I mean it. And yeah, for those that don't know, you guys have been playing some shows in and about Ontario.
Yes.
Which we'll chat a little bit about. And you also have something coming up. So we'll plug this a couple times, so we'll just hit the ball rolling here. What brings you in today? What do you guys have going on?
So today we are plugging our Hamilton show, which is this Saturday, December 14th at the Cotton Factory. It's me, Luke Bentham, and Peter Van Helver to my right, and our good friend Drew Thompson of Single Mother's Infamy, and Brandon Jagurski of, I believe, is currently on the Interpol. No, Brandon Jagurski is not a fugitive, but he is going to be doing some comedy as well, which may end up landing him on that list. But his material is quite excellent, but a little spicy.
He was excellent last night.
Yeah, he was really good.
And when you say last night, where did you guys perform?
We were in Tilsonburg.
For those that don't know, where's Tilsonburg?
Tilsonburg is, what is it?
Like near London.
Yeah.
London-ish.
London-esque.
But is it north of London? I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I can't tell once you go that way on the highway.
I plug it into the phone and it gets me there. But it's you know, of Stomp and Tom Tilsonburg fame.
Yeah.
My back still aches when I hear that word, you know. But we played at a great place called The Mill. And it was a lot of fun. They fed us well and they treated us extremely generously and we had a great show.
Nice. So it was the four of you. So yourself.
Yes.
And you said Drew.
Yep.
And
Brandon Jagurski.
Brandon doing comedy.
Yes.
Have you played shows with comedians before? Is this a common thing? Or what was the tie-in there?
I don't know if I'd call Brandon a comedian, but if we're using the term loosely, yes. No,
Brandon, if you're listening, you can call in and rebut. Anyways.
Brandon was on the last group of shows that we did as well. He's like a good friend of ours, and he's kind of like our mascot.
Yes, and he is actually the drummer of Single Mothers. So,
oh, okay.
Many multi-talented man.
Yeah.
And his father is a stuntman, and he was one of the Spartans in 300.
Whoa.
Like the shredded dudes in 300, yeah.
Yeah. Is he shredded also?
Brandon's pretty shredded, yeah.
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 Have you ever seen, I don't think I've ever seen a drummer / comedian set. That would be a first. Because you see
Fred
the guitar
Armisen.
Thing.
Fred Armisen.
He's got a bit.
No, he does. He did a whole comedy for drummers. He has a whole special.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. It is really funny, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I've seen his bit because I think it came up where he was on like one of those talk shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And he kind of did, I guess, obviously like a bit from it, but he has a whole special about it.
He does, yes. Yeah. It's, I think it's called Stand Up for Drummers. But
yes.
Like,
that's good.
Which is actually a great title.
Great
but,
title.
He walks you through like the various, like the eras of drumming as it pertains to popular music and, you know, talks about different drum beats and how some are really annoying. And he does a really good impression of guitar players coming into the rehearsal with their song. It's worth checking out if you're at all interested in comedy and or music.
He apparently made people do like paradiddles to get in
into
the thing. And do you know the Seaway part of this story?
No.
They were down there while he was doing that show, and they got robbed, and he like invited them to his office, and he gave the drummer of Seaway a drum set.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
Look, another local band, Seaway.
Shout out.
We did the Warped Tour together in 2015. We shared a bandwagon for 2.5 months.
Where did you guys go? Was it all North America?
I think we only did one Canadian show. It was all the United States. Yeah. It started in Pomona, which is just outside of LA. And then it ended in Seattle, and then we crossed back up into Vancouver and traveled home across the country doing shows.
Yeah. Yeah, Seaway, they're from Oakville, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and they're kind of in the same vein as you guys. So for those listening who don't know, we got Luke from The Nil, and we got Pete from everything, Glorious Sons, Teenage Kicks, everything. And they've got a show coming up this Saturday.
This Saturday at the Cotton Factory.
Yeah, Cotton Factory.
Mule Spinner, rather.
Same, yeah. So it's kind of confusing.
And
when I first learned about it, the Mule Spinner is a venue, if you will, in the Cotton Factory.
Exactly.
So if you're going and you're driving and you see the Cotton Factory, just like drive down that way. A little bit. When you feel a little bit dangerous, that's when you go a bit further, and then it's there.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I was there 2 weekends ago. I saw a show. My partner was like, "Are you sure we're going the right way?" I'm like, "Guaranteed, 100%.
Yeah. It's a little stabby feeling over there. Yeah.
Yeah. But have you? All that being said, I shouldn't have said all that. It is actually a beautiful,
gorgeous space inside there. But it does have a very like Dickensian. Industrial Revolution, Charles Dickens type vibe from the outside, but once you get into the interior of the building, it's gorgeous. And Glenn Marshall has done an amazing job of turning it into a cozy, intimate venue space.
Yeah, and I've talked with him quite a bit about, like, you know, putting on shows there and stuff like that. And he seems like the kind of person who wants to just like put the right show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's very serious about not just kind of booking anything and everything. He seems to be very, you know, dare I use the word boutique about things, and trying to put on a show that he feels proud to put on, and that he feels cohesive and like a good value for the ticket buyer's hard-earned dollars, and we're proud to be one of those such packages.
Yeah, and I'm really you know, grateful. Obviously, you guys wanted to come on the show, and obviously to promote it. So that's this Saturday, and I don't know, like when you were thinking of venues for your shows. You know, why did you, I think we probably already answered this, but like, why did you land on the Mule Spinner?
Well, Glenn put it on the first time. And did you book that one?
That was one of the ones that was on my list. Drew did most of the last tour, and I did Hamilton and maybe one other show, but there wasn't a lot of places to do a show that seemed like it was the right fit.
Yeah.
Fit as far as size or energy? What do you mean by fit?
Kind of energy. That was one of the best shows. Like, we did some shows on that last run that were in bars, and that was, like, not the vibe. Like, it just wasn't, like, the right feeling. It was, like, it was still fun, but it was just kind of, like, almost you almost felt like you were the background music at Boston Pizza or something like that. But
With, like, sports in the background, something like that. Yeah.
But Mule Spinner was, like, actually, I think specifically Sicario was on like the entire time we were playing in London. Do you remember that?
I do.
Like literally like 3 feet to the left of my face.
Sorry, Sicario?
Sicario, the film. Like the movie about the drug dealers. Mexican drug dealers.
Good film.
Great movie. Yeah, it is.
Plug it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Mule Spinner was just like, I don't know, it just felt nice, and I think Maddie Leon was the one who told me about it. So
yeah, and Maddie's a great guy, and he's totally got that vibe down, so that makes sense.
Yeah, and Glenn's done a great job of kind of furnishing it nicely. I think one of the things that the criteria for places that we are kind of pursuing to do this type of show is somewhere that where you can actually sit down and have a drink and enjoy it, and not kind of be packed in standing around, you know, over as I said, Sicario, or as Pete said. But we're trying to make it so that it's a, you know, if I may say, like a, you know, a quiet listening experience where you go and have a few drinks and you go and listen, rather than you know, just kind of fit in some music in and amongst rounds of chicken wings. Though we're not against playing chicken wing.
Why not?
Sure. Dispensaries. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chicken wing dispensaries, which are outlawed in 35 of 50 states.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's great. I think it's great. And I think what excites me about your show that you have is it feels like it's more of like an acoustic representation of your guys' performances, and I think that's fascinating because obviously you're from the Nil, and which is like, let's throw on the distortion, let's get the Marshall stack out, let's do it.
Yeah.
And actually I've seen you perform acoustically before at the J.R. Diggs.
Right.
I don't know if you've done that many years, but yeah, one of the years I came and I saw you, and you know, I knew you were from the Nil, and I'm okay, like all you do is go up with your guitar.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's gonna happen here? And my gosh, like your voice just carried that room, dude.
Oh, thank you.
It was wild.
Well, it's funny because I started doing the J.R. Diggs show in 2013, I think, and I just I kind of found it as like a way of like, I view it as a way of like apologizing to my mom, for what my actual career is. And my mom's very supportive of what I do in the Nil and what we do collectively, but, to get up there and do some more kind of Sinatra or croony type stuff, I think it validates her investment in, guitar lessons, more so than seeing me go up on a stage with 100 watts behind me and an upside down cross on my back, selling t-shirts that have swear words on them. So I think it's, and my mom and my parents enjoy that. And, you know, we're a rodeo type family for sure. But I think that it's nice for the parents, of the people, or it's nice for my parents to come see, me play some tunes that don't have as much cursing in them.
I love that. As far as your vocals go, I have to ask because it does blow me away, and I think I may have just like undersold punk rock vocals my whole life, and then when I saw you perform, like, wow. Are there other punk rock vocalists that you know that are just like, they've got the chops and that maybe is underrated?
For sure. I mean, let me think. I think one of the things that I've really kind of grown to respect above a lot of things is just stamina. And so, you know, we've had the privilege of touring with a lot of really big punk bands with some pretty intense vocals, and seeing how they can do it night after night after night, that's the thing that really impresses me over a certain kind of like vocal quality that people have. And so Laura Jane Grace from Against Me was incredible, seeing how she could do those vocals every single night. Blew my mind. I mean, we were playing for like half an hour a night on that tour. It was a 2-month tour, and they had to play for like an hour and a half. And, you know, those songs are really high and really, really tough on the voice. And I just couldn't wrap my head around how she could do it every single night. But, you know, I think that stamina is a very underrated quality in vocalists, particularly in the loud rock and roll field, because, you know, as I'm sure most people know, like, our revenue is mostly tied up into live performance at this point in the current model of the industry. And so if you can only sing two nights out of a week, then, you know, your entire operation is kind of hamstrung by two folds of skin in one guy's throat or one person's throat.
Well put.
Yeah. So the people that can actually do it and do it reliably and consistently, that's where I kind of stand back and say, wow, that's impressive.
Okay. So what's if someone's listening out there and maybe they're that person who's like, I can do the weekend show and then I need 3 days to recover. Do you have any thing for them?
Yeah, I mean, I would strongly recommend singing lessons. I started taking them in the pandemic, because I was just sitting around. I had nothing to do. And I said, oh, you know, might as well work on the old chops while stuck at home. And that's made a significant difference for me. We spent a number of years just basically doing support tours. And, you know, that basically entails opening for a bigger band and playing for a very small amount of time. And so it's very easy to kind of delude yourself into thinking that you can kind of that, oh, I've got this. This is easy. I can play for five nights in a row and this is easy. But that's only 25 or 30 minutes. And then you get to go to bed the first. But
right. You don't think about that.
No. But when you're headlining, when you're going out there and you're the first to load in, first to sound check, last to leave, you got to play the longest. That's when I think the real stamina starts coming into play, and that's something that a lesson that I learned the hard way, probably about 6 or 7 years ago on our first like really big headlining tour, in a number of years, and you will get sick on tour, you will get your body thrashed, and it's about being able to still do the show while your body is not feeling the best. I really made a strong effort in that department to try and make it so that I wasn't the one the singer of Peter's band, had a really good line about when your voice is in trouble and you're the lead singer. He said, "Brother, that's a lonely pain." And it's true, because everybody else is just looking around at you and they kind of feel sorry for you and they're trying to support you, but you're just like, you don't know what I'm going through, like, you know, in your mind, but you can't even vocalize that because you're on vocal rest. So it's like, it's
you're writing on a notepad.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I for part of certain tours in that area, you know, I had this app on my phone where I'd type it in and it would say it to people, and I was like a robot. But thankfully, knock on wood, I've been pretty good since then. And you know, I would say invest in singing lessons. Like, I think they're particularly useful if you're looking to increase your stamina, which is exactly what I wanted to do. And being able to sing vowels, like tighter vowels, like E's and I's at a higher pitch and be able to do that using less force, that's kind of been a really valuable takeaway that I've gotten from that whole exercise. But yeah, headlining and doing it and traveling every day. And, you know, it really does put a lot of stress on your body. So I would invest in that.
I love it.
And you can see this Saturday in Hamilton the fruits of Luke's labor at the Mule Spinner.
Come see my singing lessons on display.
It's truly incredible. And it sounds amazing.
You just read my mind, Peter. That was great. Well done. We got Peter and Luke, Dirty Nil and Glorious Sons. That we'll classify that.
Teenage Kicks.
Darling Congress.
Cain and Abel.
There we go, yes. Let's start with a track. Let's hear these vocal lessons in action. What song did we say we were going to cue up from
the note? Well, I said Pain of Infinity, but if Luke wants to hear something else, it is truly his show and I'm just here.
Let's throw on Pain of Infinity. Let's do it.
This is my favorite Neil song.
Don't be led there, you're an infant.
That's it. That's the song, Pain of Infinity, by The Dirty Nil. We got Luke in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Pete. Peter.
Hello.
I keep calling you Pete. No one calls you Pete, except for I do from my head from way back when.
Yeah. Yeah. My uncle is Pete, and my opa was Pete, but most people do call me Peter. I prefer Pete. It sounds more fun than I am, I think. You call me
Pete. I call you Pete.
They call me Uncle Pete. That's Uncle for Pete. The longest time.
Yeah. Well, we went to high school together. That's the connection here, yeah. me and Peter. And I don't know, like, you were just, like, the older guy, and, like, I guess at the time, everyone shortens their names, so it's like, he's Pete. And then, you know, here we are years later, and I'm like, Pete-er.
Doesn't matter to me. You can call me anything you want.
All right. Well, Peter, you got it. Pain of Infinity, you said that's your favorite Nil track.
Yes. There's lots of songs that I quite enjoy. Well, I mean, they're not really bad Nil songs. You guys are
well said.
But it's true. They're one of those bands, and Luke is one of those writers where it's just like, it's all good. It's just, it just ends up being a matter of which one you prefer personally. It becomes more subjective. But I don't know. That song I just thought was so neat when I first heard it.
Do you have a favorite Nil album?
That one, Higher Power. But I like them all for different reasons. You know, that's not Higher Power. That's Master Volume. But I like Higher Power for different reasons. I was around for the demoing a lot of those songs. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Fuck Art, I was not around for at all. I just kind of got to hear it as a listener. And, you know, the new record I really like, Free Reign to Passions, like, I like it all. You know, I like the Minimum R&B stuff, which all that stuff happened before I met them. So that was kind of cool, you know, to just hear the band in that early stage.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite? I got really high there.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite?
Well, I think, I like and dislike them all for different reasons, but I do think that we nailed it pretty hard on Master Volume, I think. Like, I do have, I think that that's the one that I have, out of the ones that are released, that one is my, I have the fondest memories of recording it, and I think that, it was the first, it was the first record that we made where I was really, really proud of how it turned out, I'd say. I think that there's a lot of charm to the earlier stuff that I also enjoyed making, but I just think that Master Volume is our first, like, really proper studio recording that we still stand by today and haven't really had, like, a love-hate relationship with, like we've had with some of the earlier stuff where that was recorded differently. Or, you know, it actually took us a long time to get decent at recording. We've been a band since 2006, but we didn't make Master Volume until the beginning of 2018, and that's a long time. I mean, we weren't idle. Like, we were putting out singles and EPs, and we put out Higher Power as our first record, and Master Volume is, I think, where we made it, and I was just really excited about the songs that I was bringing in, and I was excited about the arrangements that we had for them. And it was just a killer time in the studio where I think earlier times that we had recorded, it was like, well, this sounds like this in the room, but it's not sounding like this under the mics. And we're kind of spending a day, like, trying to find a tone that doesn't exist, or like, we plugged things in and then we just blew through it. And it was a lot of fun.
How much of it do you think it was years of trial and error to get to that point?
It was a lot of trial and error. I think we really got our asses kicked on our first album, basically, again. And I've come back to our first album being like, oh, it's much better than I remember it being in my mind. But I remember for a long time I could only hear the things that I didn't like about it.
Naturally.
Yeah. And since we've kind of had a few more victories under our belt, I'm able to, with subsequent albums, I've been able to kind of reevaluate that album, having some distance from it. But I think a large part of why Master Volume sounds as good as it does, at least to me, is because we had John Goodmanson produce and engineer it, and he's just an incredible engineer and a good producer too. And we worked really, really hard before we had even gotten in the room together with him, we had tightened up the arrangements a lot. We worked really, really hard. And it was, I think, everybody just brought it. And Kyle's drums were just a whole leap above anything else that he had recorded on Master Volume. And the guitars are pretty kick-ass, too.
Yeah, you know what's funny? When I listen to my for earlier recordings and I listen to my guitar playing versus, like, where I am today, and I'm like, wow, I really didn't understand how to do it then. Like, did you find that that happened as well? Like, even your guitar playing has evolved?
Yes.
And, you know, you're able to do things or approach it in a different way that you couldn't have done, say, 10 years earlier?
Yeah, I think there was other things, too, like really basic things. Like, when we did Higher Power, we were incapable as a unit of playing to a click track. And so, you know, our tempos were kind of pretty wild. And there's like a certain amount of that I think is integral to the band's sound, of kind of push and pull. And we don't record everything to a click or anything like that. We play with a click and we mess with it. And like, and we will do this part to a click, but then the rest of it, you know, we'll just kind of, we'll just do it how we feel and play together. But there was a time when we were recording Higher Power where we were listening back to the tracks, and there was a part in one song that was supposed to be like halftime, and we realized like, this isn't halftime, this is like two-thirds time. Like, it's right. Like, it's just a completely different tempo, and we were not able in the studio to correct that.
Was
because
that
we
weaknesses?
Yeah, we yeah. lacked the skills as musicians collectively to be able to realign and adjust to this new discovery. And so we just kind of had to record it as is, and it just kind of sat with me like, well, that was a bit of an oversight.
Right.
So I had a bit of a chip on my shoulder about how the first one had gone, because there was a lot of disappointments in the making of that one. And so by the time we made Master Volume, a lot of effort had been put in ahead of that album to not be to not end up in with the same sort of predicaments as we did the prior time.
I kind of feel like when we did that stuff in the basement in Toronto, we almost got closer to where Master Volume ended up, because I was always like, don't scream. And like, I
yeah.
wanted you guys to be a big rock band.
Yeah.
And so we kind of recorded it that way. We still yeah. recorded it very fast. Everything was done extremely fast. But that's one of the reasons why I liked that record so much, is I felt like, you know, there's lots of stuff I like about Higher Power, but I felt like I had finally heard you guys the way that it sounded in my head.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I think Master Volume sounds like us on a on a good night live, but with a bit more kind of studio fairy dust sprinkled on top. But yeah, I just had a great time doing it, and I also just like, I had never heard my guitar sound so sick. So I really like Master Volume.
Okay, so I was gonna actually acknowledge your honesty, because, you know, you've had so much success, especially, you know, like, you know, everyone's cheering for you and Hamilton, right? So to hear you come on the air and talk about like things you didn't like about it, I think that's a great honest thing. That's actually one of the things I love about the show, is like people get to like just share the real things, and like we're all musicians.
Right.
And I was gonna go down that rabbit hole, but then you talked about your guitar tone, and I'm like, I'd rather talk about that. So I, in my research, and obviously knowing you as an artist here in Hamilton, we have something in common, that I have a 76 custom.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
How's that? How heavy is it? Let me ask you that.
Yeah, so that was the question I was going to ask you. So you have this tiny strap.
Yes, I do.
Right? You have this tiny strap, and this thing is really heavy, and I keep thinking, like, one day I'm going to get something lighter. And, like, it's actually given me, like, shoulder, neck pain. Do you get anything like that, or what's your approach to playing a heavy guitar?
Well, I did, and then I started doing 125 push-ups a day.
Heck yeah.
This
guy's juice.
Well, listen, if you either...
Me too.
I went to a doctor, and they basically just, like, because I started getting some shoulder pains when we started doing headlining tours, and I was like, yo, this is kind of weird. There was like, it's not really that weird that you're playing an 11-pound guitar, and you basically have it strung around your neck with a shoelace,
yes.
and you're jumping around like a madman.
Yeah.
It's not that crazy that it's hurting you. And so I said, well, what are my options? He said, well, you can play a lighter guitar. I was like, what are my other options? And he said, well, you should strengthen your back and your shoulders. And I said, okay, well, I can do that. So I just... I just started doing those, and I haven't really had any problems since then.
In the world of punk rock, strats, stuff like that, you're playing a Gibson humbucker. Why, how, when, who? I got
to
know.
Well, I apologies to our listeners that don't care about guitar, but we do intensely. So
this is inside the music.
This is inside the music.
This is not a guitar. This is not outside the music. This is inside the music.
Well, Peter can attest to the fact that I had a bizarre array of different equipment in the early years, and I had, you know, a lot of ridiculous malfunctions that would happen live, and like really just stupid stuff that was just like, yo, that's really preventable.
Like what? Sorry.
Well, you know, just to clue you in on something, this is a really great piece of nil information, but we didn't believe in using tuners on stage until we were about 23, 24, 25 even, something like that. Like when I think
was it just an ethos thing?
It was an ego thing is what it was. It was like we didn't like how they looked, and we were just like, no, it's more pure if you tune by it. No, it's not. Nobody wants to watch you tune, okay? So, you know, it wasn't until I got a tuner and because I was just like we started playing some bigger shows, opening for some bigger bands like The Offspring and stuff, and it was like we kind of had a meeting because I think we all had the same fear that, like, you know, we can't go up there and, like, do what we do. Like, we can't – yeah, dwang. And it's – you never get it into – because you're, like, feeling the pressure of all these people staring at – it's ridiculous. So we got to – I think that was the first show that we used tuners, and we're like, we should have done this a long time ago.
That was the exact show I was thinking of because Jacob Smith booked you guys on that show, who mm-hmm. was, like, involved with our band. And literally the first thing I asked him was if you guys had gotten tuners. And he's like, I believe so, yes.
So I think we just like, I think like growing up and like watching bands like the White Stripes, we're like, oh, I'm going to use a really cool, interesting guitar. And I had a lot of cool, interesting guitars that I could not get to sound. I couldn't get them to stay in tune. I'm a pretty hard player. Like my right hand is very
like you're piggish. Strumming
yeah, hand. Yeah, I'm a very forceful right hand player. And I do a lot of bending with my left hand, and so I do need a lot of tuning stability out of a guitar. And so one day, I think it was just because I got like insanely into Raw Power by the Stooges, and I just became obsessed with this album, like the Iggy mix, where you can only hear the guitar and the vocals, and everything else just sounds like white noise. I was like, this is everything to me. And so I was like, what guitar is he playing? And it was a Les Paul Custom, and I was just like, I went out. And I bought a Les Paul Custom, and I bought a Marshall Plexi, and I plugged in a Rat, and I have not turned back since. And I have since left all the bizarre gear up in my attic, and I take it out once in a while. I'm like, you know, maybe one. And then I start messing around with it, and I'm like, no, this is fine, but like, under the rigors of a live performance, I don't want to have to think about this stuff. I want something that's gonna work. You know, it's just nobody cares about your cool decision to not use a tuner, bro. Like, people want to, like, don't waste people's time. Just, like, yeah. Go up there, do your best, and doing your best involves being in tune. I'm a firm believer in.
This is so nice for me because I feel like most of our relationship our early relationship together was me like taking you guys aside and being like, here's what I think. And you guys being like, fuck you, old man.
yeah. Listen, I've come around. I am now 34 years old and I am here to extol the virtues of
screw
stage
you,
tuners.
Man.
Yes. So yeah, I mean, I basically went through so much. So like I derailed, we both did, like me and Dave would derail so many performances using gear that looked cool. And like,
what was something that looked cool? Tell me one of your guitars
that looked
cool.
So I have this preamp unit called a Garnett Herzog. I still have it. We didn't plug it in, but we were just hanging out with it right before we came down here. But it's like this. It's like a little guitar head that makes distortion. Randy Bachman used it on American Woman, like that sound is a Herzog. But I used to use one of those. And it would fall off my giant amp stack all the time and just break or, like, have grounding issues. It would just, you know, that's just one thing. Then I used, like, all these vintage fuzz pedals that would just die.
Yeah.
Or get unplugged or what, like, whatever. Like, and so Once I kind of stumbled onto the rig that I have now about 12 years ago, I literally have, like, I've swapped out individual components to directly replace it with the exact same thing. That's right. The only thing that I've changed is I have not changed one thing because it just works for me. I know how to use what I have and get a variety of whatever I need to do. And, you know, I'm also a firm believer that, like, when you're playing a live show, and even if you're a band like this that's, like, quite guitar-driven, nobody cares or can hear the difference between your different boosts and drives. And, like, no, nobody cares.
Wait, it's, they can't? Yeah. They don't?
Nope.
Are you
Listen, spoiler alert. Like, it doesn't matter. I just all I need is to be loud and reasonably in tune, and then to have an option to go one notch louder, and that's it. That's all I have.
Because you got the two rats, right?
Yeah.
And for those that don't know, it's a distortion pedal. And if you've totally tuned out, I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry, everyone.
Yeah. But someone out there is really dialed in.
Oh, for sure.
No pun intended. So you've got the two rats. You have one that's like your basic, and then when you want to kick into that next one, you just kick the second one on.
Yeah. And then the only other thing I added, I have a tuner. As I said, but I have a freeze pedal, and the freeze pedal basically just makes it so that, like, when I'm changing guitars, if I hit out the last chord, I press that pedal and it sustains the chord while I'm so it's
like kind of like feedback, but not really feedback.
Jeff uses it a bunch.
Yeah,
like that's how he does like almost all of his transitions.
It's very
your brother Jeff. Yeah. Jeff got it, that. Did he get that from?
No,
Luke, or that's just
I think it's kind of an industry standard at this point. Yeah.
It's like it's almost like you used to have like a loop pedal to do something like that, right? To just get like that little transition piece or whatever while you were changing guitar or tuning or whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of actually I should know it, but I don't. But that's what I love about the show. I usually just kick on both my delay pedals
and just
let those things just go on until the next thing. But that sounds like a lot easier and a lot less
grating.
Grating, stressful, because things can go really squirrely with a delay.
I used to use a Memory Man. Like, I had a 70s Memory Man, and that it, like, and people were like, yo, get the Memory Man. Don't use the Freeze. The Freeze is a cop-out. And then I used the Memory Man, and the Memory Man was cool, but it would do something completely different every single time.
Sometimes it was like, that was the, you guys see how cool
that was? Did you hear that? Yeah.
And sometimes it's...
Sometimes, and it's coming through like 100-watt plexi, so it's not like, it's like, it's, if it's bad, it's bad. Like, it's not good. And so listen, I'm a guy that I obviously value like aesthetics and vibe, but I also like, the older I've gotten and the more of a serious career that I've been fortunate enough to enjoy, the more of a premium I've placed on reliability.
Totally. Totally. And I noticed in that last song we played, we'll probably throw another track right now, is that you did this like stutter thing. Was that using the toggle there? Was that a Jack White inspired thing, or is that just a thing you picked up?
No, I think I got that from Ace Frehley. Yeah, I just saw him do all that stuff. And, like, I also just, like, you know, it's just one of those things, too, that, like, when I got my first Les Paul, which was, like, 20 years ago, like, it was one of the first things that I ever, like I discovered that I could do with it.
Right.
And so I just kind of... It's like it's just a lot of fun to do.
I love it. Yeah, I'm similar. I'm the opposite. I play with the one pickup and don't play the other ones. But, yes. Anyways, for those listening, we got Luke from The Nil. And we have Pete from Everything. And they're playing a show on Saturday.
Saturday, December 14th at the Mule Spinner in Hamilton, Ontario.
And we gave out tickets, actually. And I sent you the message, Peter, but I didn't send you, Luke. The person who won, Shay Martin, I think. Shay Martin, if she's listening. She was so excited. She wrote and she said, I can't believe I won. I've never won anything on Instagram. This is amazing.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome.
You got
congratulations.
Yes, yeah, congratulations, Shay, and you guys. Honestly, like, I think you definitely made this person's day.
Oh, that's awesome.
And like, it's gonna be a great show. So I'm glad that you were able to, you know, give out some tickets and come on the show and talk about it. Let's throw a track on, and then we'll come back for like a wrap up. How does that sound, guys?
Sounds good.
Cool. Did we have something queued up or no?
No, but let's put on Digging Up Old Bones by Teenage Kicks.
Thank you.
Okay, wow. While I cue it up, tell us about the song.
This is my favorite Teenage Kick song of many that I still really love enjoying listening to, but I just think Pete nailed it on the writing side of this one, and I loved when they would play this one, and I love the arrangement, I love everybody's contribution to it, and I love watching Pete play it to this day.
Oh, thank you.
The beat is out and it did it, so I'm out of there, get stomped, and I'm feeling so alien. Maybe I should phone home. You tell me stop singing about ghosts and I stop digging up bones. Oh yeah. I love you by the moon, I hate you by the sun. Roll me over, Beethoven, I'm the chosen one. I told you stop chasing them ghosts, you're blessing no one. Oh, hey. You know what I want, I know what you need. We just wanna be something that I believe in. You're as quiet as a mouse. I told them to cut the lights. Still like they are. Oh yeah. You know what I want, I know what you need. We just wanna be something that I believe. You know what I want, I know.
We were chatting off air, Luke, Pete, and Russ, Stereo Russ, so much that I was talking about my guitar, and now I'm unprepared for this section. If you are in the neighborhood on Saturday and you want to go check out a show, check these guys out. The Mule Spinner off of Sherman there. The Cotton Factory. Yeah, right after the Playhouse. Yeah, it's going to be great. And if you haven't seen Luke in that setting from the Dirty Nil, like, check it out. Like watching him sing, like sing live, like stripped down is an amazing thing. So definitely go check it out.
Thank you, Russ.
You're welcome. And if you want to check out more of these guys, where can they find you online?
I'm on Instagram at LukeNukem90. And,
That's almost Brandon's bit about the high school email addresses.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I'm Peter VH Music on Instagram. Yeah.
Wonderful. And I'm Stereo Russ, at Stereo Russ. If you missed the first part of this episode, you can go to my thing, and then it'll be on a my podcast thing. It's all there. If you find it, and you'll find the beginning of this episode. And actually, that's funny you said that about...
Mr. Spisak?
No, emails, early emails. Because I was thinking about Luke Nukem, and I was thinking, like, I got to come up with a Duke Nukem joke, but I couldn't think of any. But it got me thinking about my first email address. Do you guys remember your first email address?
Of course. Yes.
What was yours?
Mine was Ramones_6_6_6@hotmail.com.
Everything about you is so cool. Like, it's true. You're just like...
I wish I still knew the login.
Infinitely cool.
Yeah.
No. I honestly think the earliest email I remember is this terribly long and stupid one that I had, which was rock and roll won't save you, it didn't save me @hotmail.com.
Oh man, that's
which
long.
That's still like my Facebook email address. Password 111111.
If anyone wants to get in there, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that's all I remember. I mean, I had those stupid bands in high school that all had like the erection related like band names. That's about as stupid as it got for me. I'm sure I had some sort of Hotmail related to those. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Russ?
RJP5020.
Oh, that's safe.
It was, you know what? I was at the time, I was thinking about it. Like, I remember my parents were really paranoid about, like, don't put anything real on the internet. Don't put your first name. Yeah. Don't put your last name. Now it's like everything's face digitized.
Yeah, you're like Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was it. Yeah.
My Oma, they got her a computer for her birthday. Like, this would have been like a Windows tower. And she, like, not looking at the spelling of Hotmail, thought Hotmail was like a Hotmail. And she's like, I don't want no pornography. rest in peace, Oma.
Yeah, she was a real one for that.
I love it. I love it. Oh, man. So, yeah, that's about it. That's all I have as far as real questions. Can I just throw a couple fun ones at you guys?
Yeah.
And just kind of roll it out? All right, cool. So, here's a question for you. What is the greatest punk album of all time?
I think it's pretty hard to nail down. I mean, like, my favorite probably is got to be... Oh, man. There's so many that are just tough to... It depends on how I'm feeling, but, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Sorry Ma, Forgot to Take Out the Trash, the first Replacements album. It's pretty ripping, and it has kind of everything that I love about... American punk music and American country music all kind of rocked into one. I think Paul's one of my favorite, if not my favorite singer of all time. So I really like that one. And as I said, Raw Power is always kind of going to be my guitar Bible. But I think that the second Stooges album, Funhouse, is pretty unassailable too in terms of like the sound of a band just on fire. Funhouse is crazy. And but maybe at the end of the day, I'd still go with Kick Out the Jams. Like, I used to listen to that when we were kind of at the very beginning of like really getting the band going and really getting into touring. To fire myself up, I would just like go for a run and listen to that album on like from front to back, and that would kind of be the duration of my run. And I just would imagine that I was Wayne Kramer, and it was awesome.
Yeah, that's a visceral album.
The guitars are out of tune. It's insane. You can just hear how loud they are, but the crowd is so loud, and it's just, it's out of control. It's like, you know, my godfather who got me into guitar, he described like seeing bands of that era that were playing through those massive stacks was like basically like watching somebody try and drive a Formula One car. And he said that there's only two guitar players in that whole era. And he saw everybody. He saw the first Zeppelin tour. He saw, you know, he saw like Hendrix. He saw that. He said the only two people that he ever saw control the guitar in a way that you see somebody like going like sliding through the corners in an F1 car was Pete Townsend and Jimi Hendrix were the only two people that like could play in tune like reliably and could tune really fast on the fly and get back in tune when they inevitably went out. He said that everybody else, like half the show, was just tuning. Like when he saw,
yeah,
you know, when you'd go see something like the MC5 or you know, which, but Kick Out the Jams is an amazing document of like a band that is like struggling to ride their own wave. Like it's amazing the power coming out of the speakers. And I mean, when you A/B it with like a modern record with like modern production, it sounds quite thin in comparison. But if you crank it by itself and you listen to it, it's a pretty visceral experience.
I love it. I love it. This is a question for both of you guys. The three main components of being in a band, you got writing, you got recording, you got live performance. What's your favorite?
Well, I think I really like all three now. I mean, I used to have such a weird love-hate relationship with writing. I used to have kind of like mystical ideas around it, and I'm far more kind of blue-collar workman-like in my approach to it now. Of just like, yeah, you just show up and you do it, and some days you come home with nothing, and some days you come home with something that there's no better feel. I think John Prine said it. It's like there's no better feeling than having a heater in your back pocket and no one's heard it yet. Like that is the feeling that I live for. That's a great feeling. But second to that is like the feeling of like recording that and like getting that down and being like, we did it, guys. Like we had, like it's we didn't screw it up. You know, we landed the bird, you know. Yeah. But then also it's impossible to describe the joy of getting to play a song that you made to a bunch of people that love it and are singing it back to you. I mean, that's a really rare privilege that I'm honored to get to enjoy from time to time. But yeah, I mean, I at this stage in rock and roll, I'm just happy to be here, and I thoroughly enjoy all three.
I love that.
This guy gives one answer after another that is of the quality of a Ramones 6_6_6 at hotmail.com email address as a first email. He's so hard to follow. Back in the day, it was writing, like Teenage Kicks time when I would like wake up with songs in my head. That was definitely like where it was not like I didn't do anything other than write. Now that I've like gotten... I very much have like house head where I can't function if I haven't like fixed whatever's wrong in the house. So it just takes like a lot of my my free time doing just like, you know, functional work. And then when I'm not doing functional work in my house, I'm doing functional work in the Glory Suns or like something else. So
right.
I found that I haven't, and I'm hoping this changes for the next few months in the winter, but I haven't been able to be creative in the way that I once was in a long time. It's very hard to balance being creative with like trimming 35 trees on your property. But I'm hoping I can find a better, like healthier balance. Playing shows has always been extremely stressful for me. The second we get to a venue, I'm just like hoping some sort of catastrophic thing happens so that I can cancel the show, because I just get insane anxiety about it. Once it happens, it's okay. But I still really like recording, because it's like something that I can control, and I think that I get kind of rewarded for the amount of time I put into trying to be good at the instrument. And it basically, there's kind of like a direct correlation to the amount of work that I put in as a musician and the result that I get as a performer. Whereas live is just like, it's still quite unpredictable. The sound person can mess up your set. You can forget something, and then I get very nervous about it. So yeah, that's my Blink182_95 at yahoo.ca email answer.
Great. I love it. And you said you couldn't follow it up. That was a great answer.
Thank
you.
Okay, two more questions. We got it quick here. And first off, actually I will say thank you for coming on.
It's our pleasure. Thanks for having us, Russ.
Okay, second last question. This is from a friend of mine. His name is Dan. He has a bunch of video games. He's like the Nintendo guy. I'm not sure if you know who I'm talking about. It's okay if you don't.
Do you go to University of Waterloo?
Yeah.
I know Dan, yeah.
Yeah, Dan and I are old work buddies.
Amazing. Dan had like all these beer pong tables that were... I know. Yeah, Dan's the man. How's he doing?
He's doing great. He has a question for you.
Okay.
This is a fan question. He says, why did you decide to go with star shirts and where do you buy them?
Good question.
So the first Star shirt came about when we were on our second ever East Coast tour of Canada, and we were in this store where every shirt was $10, and this white shirt, short sleeve button up shirt with red and white stars on it, was $10. And I took it off the rack and I put it on, and everyone was just laughing, and I felt very powerful wearing it. So my friend bought it for me for $10, and then I basically wore that out. I still have that one. I still have all my Star shirts, but after that, I was just kind of in search of the next one, and then Levi's put out a couple, and I started buying those, and then I started having them custom made, and it just kind of became a thing. And you know, I don't feel like I'm hostage to it. Like, I mix it up from time to time, but I think it's also just like I feel in my bones that I'm at least 7% better at the electric guitar if I'm wearing a shirt covered in stars.
I love that. And the fact that you get them custom, I appreciate that. Last question. What do you like to put in a hot dog?
I'm going to go with onions and mustard for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I'm at Costco, just ketchup and mustard. But if I was to make one at home, probably some bacon bits and a couple pieces of cheddar cheese as well.
An aristocrat.
Ramones 6 underscore 6 underscore 6.
Sorry. Fellas, Luke, Peter, thank you again for coming on the show.
You're having it.
This is an absolute a joy. Thank you so much. For those listening, please, Saturday, swing by the Mule Spinner. Check them out. It's going to be a great show. Great people. Say hi. Maybe there'll be a star shirt. Maybe not. But there's definitely going to be good vibes.
Amen to that.
Thanks, Russ.
Bye, everybody.
Playing around, you need to tell your girl, take a fine ass home, and that's real.